unfortunately, I'm not quite sure how this is going to really work tonight now, because I'd sort of designed this Bible study around some DVDs I bought, especially for these particular studies, with some visuals on that I felt, and a little bit of commentary that I felt would have been really helpful this evening, but unfortunately we can't play that. So it might be a bit kind of itty-bitty in parts of this, because as I say, we were meant to have that. So let's just see how we go anyway. And I want us to begin to look this evening at verses 20 to 31. And we're thinking about days 5 and 6 of creation. But let me just read the whole chapter, just so we remind ourselves of where we're up to with this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures, and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every kind of every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Okay, well, what a week it had been so far. What a week it's been. And talk about being busy. and we're only up to the fifth day. I'm of course talking about creation week, I'm not talking about my own week, although that's been busy, but nothing compared with this. So I'm talking about creation week. We're only up to day five, and think of what God has already created. So day one, using the matter that he's brought into existence by the word of his power, he begins by creating light, and he separates the light from the darkness, and it says the light he called day, and the darkness he called night. And then on day two, he created the sky, the immediate atmosphere above the earth, and he separated the waters that were under the sky from the waters that were above. In other words, the waters that are on the earth from the waters that are above. And then on day three, he made dry land appear, and he gathered the waters together into one place. He made dry land appear, and then he called into existence every kind of plant, and all vegetation were brought into existence by the word of his power. Incidentally, they were brought into existence as mature plants. Okay, so in other words, he didn't plant a garden. He didn't come on day three and sprinkle a lot of different seeds all over the earth and wait for them to grow. They were brought into existence as mature trees and herbs and bushes and grasses and fruit trees, already mature, and each one having its seed in it. And incidentally, it's the same throughout creation. You know, he didn't provide, you know, eggs for creatures all over the earth that at some point will hatch and become, you know, the old saying, isn't it, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, actually, the answer is simple. If you read the Bible, it's the chicken, and its seed is within it. And so God made the vegetation mature, already mature, and all having its seed in it. And then next, on day four, he created the sun, the moon, and the stars, and that includes the galaxies, the billions of galaxies with the billions of stars that are out there. And we thought last week just a little bit about the sort of size and distances that we're dealing with, and for somebody like me it's just mind-boggling. I just cannot get my head around that kind of a distance. Going to Scotland for our holidays at the end of May, that's a long way to me, you know. But when you start thinking about the distances of the galaxies, it's just staggering. And God did it in a day. He did it in a day. And not only that, but he created it perfect, and it is perfectly ordered. It's not a mishmash of flying debris all heading who knows where. It works like clockwork.
Amen.
And in fact, such is the precision with which the solar system and the galaxy and the universe move and operate. Actually, astronomers can plot the course of a planet or an asteroid. They can tell you where it will be on any given day in the future because of the precision with which everything moves. Okay, so it works like clockwork. Everything that God does, everything that he creates, is good. So this evening we come to day five. Now on days five and six, God created something very different from anything else that he's created so far. In fact, there's a sense in which all that God has created so far is kind of in preparation for this, that he's going to create on days five and six. On days five and six, he creates living things, living creatures, creatures with life in them. You think about all those planets and stars, and you think of the rocks on Earth, the geology of it all, and everything like this, inanimate objects. But what God is going to create on days 5 and 6 are living creatures, creatures that have life in them. Fish and other creatures that live in the water, birds that fly above the Earth. And then on day 6, creatures that live on the land. And you'll notice here in verse 24, the creatures that are on the land are described under three headings. First of all, it says cattle, and the Hebrew word there is bema, and it refers to four-footed domestic animals. Okay, and then it says creeping things, and the Hebrew word there is remes, and the word remes simply means to move or to swarm. And it refers to creatures that move along the ground or swarm or along the ground. And then the third category is beasts, and the Hebrew word there is kaya, which refers to wild animals. So of course man, scientists, zoologists and biologists, they have the different kind of categories that they put different animals in, but these are the three categories that the Word of God places all land animals in: cattle, creeping things and beasts. And under these three headings is covered every kind of land animal and creature: mammals, marsupials, reptiles, dinosaurs, insects, everything that lives on land. Incidentally, on day 5, when it says God created creatures that live in the water, it doesn't just mean fish. It means all kinds of creatures that live in the seas or live in the rivers, from the smallest microscopic living thing to the giant blue whale or the ichthyosaur. Because what we've got to remember here is that the dinosaurs didn't live 150 or whatever it is million years before man, as is usually claimed in your natural history books. But dinosaurs and man lived together at the same time. Creation, according to the biblical account, was somewhere around 6,000 years ago, not billions of years ago. So in the original creation, when God created the land animals and the sea creatures, dinosaurs are included in all of that. So when we talk about creatures that live in the sea, we're not just talking about fish. We're talking about jellyfish, we're talking about starfish, we're talking about plankton, we're talking about every kind of creature, including ichthyosaurs and other dinosaurs that lived in the waters. Interesting, I think, that God should create fish and birds on the same day, because interestingly they actually have a lot in common. Not a lot of people realise this, but they do. Fish and birds have certain things in common. See, generally speaking, and it isn't true of all of them, but generally speaking, both fish and birds have a kind of streamlined body, a streamlined shape that helps them move swiftly through the native habitat. So birds through the air and fish through the sea, as it says. As I say, it isn't true of all of them, and I'll show you some examples later on of some fish you definitely wouldn't call streamlined. But for a lot of fish, they're designed in such a shape to help them move swiftly, and similarly with birds. Both fish and birds have light hollow bones, and both lay eggs, and both have migrating instincts. Again, not all, but a lot of them have migrating instincts. And because of that, and because of the similarity in those kind of areas and other things too, I suppose some evolutionists believe that supports the theory that life began in the oceans, and at some point, after millions and millions of years, animals crawled out of the sea, and once they crawled out on the sea, amphibious kind of creatures, they continued to lay eggs, as they had when they were fish. They continued to lay eggs, and they retained the migratory instinct, so they would perhaps go back to the shore to lay their eggs or whatever it is, you know. And then over time, perhaps over millions of years, some of them became birds and began to fly. And again, they retained some of their original characteristics. They still laid eggs, and they still had the migratory instincts and all the rest of it. And so some people think there are other similarities too, between not just fish and birds, but in all kinds of animals. But some people would point out there are similarities between many creatures. So many creatures have mouths. Most creatures have a mouth, and most creatures have eyes, and many creatures have ears, and so many creatures have skeletons, skeletal form that forms the shape of the animal, and other things too, organs, internal organs that that fulfill similar functions. So many different kinds of animals, whether fish or birds or animals, mammals, reptiles, many animals have similar functions like that. And so the evolutionist sees that as evidence of one species developing into another and retaining some of the original characteristics of what it was previously. In reality, it doesn't support the theory of evolution at all. What it does show is that in the myriad of different species of sea creature and land creature and birds and reptiles and everything else, what it shows is there's a common designer.
Amen.
Who actually designed them all. We do the same thing. You know, a designer may design something and he uses things that are in one design, he uses them in another thing because they work. You know, so you don't only find, for example, wheels on cars, do you? Wheels are found on all sorts of things because the idea, the principle of a wheel works for all sorts of reasons. And other things too. You find the same kind of, you know, structure that's in bridges. It's a skeletal kind of a form that holds the bridge. So people do exactly the same thing. The same designer who designs a bridge may actually use principles that he used to design his bridge to design something else. That's the way it works. Things follow through. So what it proves, the fact that birds and fish and reptiles and mammals all have eyes, proves that it's the same designer who's designed them all. And if you find something that works, not that God was looking, it works from the start. But when something works, you continue to use it, don't you? See, the amazing thing is that while there are some things, certain features that are found in creatures that are common to many creatures, actually the staggering thing, when you think about it, is the sheer range of sizes and shapes and features of literally thousands of different kinds of creatures is absolutely staggering. From creatures that are so small you would actually need a microscope to see them. I'm told that you could take a drop of water out of a ditch and a spoonful of water from a ditch could possibly hold 500 million microscopic creatures in one teaspoonful of water from a ditch. And those creatures are so small that a spoonful of water to them would be like the size of the Atlantic Ocean to us. They are so small. And those creatures were created from the same creator who gave you the universe. So he's into big and he's into small. And the big is beautiful and the small is also incredible. And then you've got creatures, from creatures that are so small to other creatures that are ginormous, like the mighty Brontosaurus, who isn't with us anymore, sadly, but he was on day six, and right up until perhaps after the Ark had landed. So, you know, he creates creatures so small that you can't see them, right up to the mighty Brontosaurus. Well, we still have huge land animals, don't we? The African elephant and the tall, graceful giraffe. There's the magnificent lion with its mane and its roar that's, you know, the king, they say, of the jungle, because it's regal, isn't it? It looks magnificent. And then you've got the beautiful Bengal tiger. A fantastic animal that is. Absolutely beautiful. And then you've got herds of zebra, all with the pyjamas on. Fantastic. And then you've got cute little bunny rabbits. And you've got huge grizzly bears. Wouldn't want a hug from one of them, would you? And with burly begun to think about it all. Okay, I've got a book here, and in this book, it shows you something of the vast array of creatures. It's ripped because I got it out of the library. It was one of them they were selling off. Okay, so I mean, God's like amazing. I mean, the things that He comes up with, you know, from things like that, sea urchins. You've got snails. Anybody like a snail? To octopuses, spiders, insects. I mean, look at them, they're fantastic. Then you get to fish. And the colours and the shapes and the sizes of them, reptiles, birds, just an infinite variety of different kinds of animals, different shapes and sizes, and all of them beautiful in their own way, aren't they? Now, you might say, no, Ian, I don't think they are. I don't like insects. Okay, I would suggest to you, it's only because you don't understand them. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't like to lie in a bath with a load of cockroaches crawling all over me. I really wouldn't. But actually, the reason we don't like them is probably because we don't understand them. But hands up if you don't like butterflies. Butterflies are beautiful, they're insects. And think of how beautiful a butterfly is. And it's like as though, you know, God's just splashed its wings with colour, actually, just to make it beautiful to the sight. Isn't it? It's fantastic, just to make it look fantastic. And crocodiles. I mean, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't want to go swimming with crocodiles. You did you, Ivan?
I didn't know they were there.
I didn't know they were there. So you wouldn't have done if you'd have known they were there. But I tell you, they're cool creatures, aren't they? I mean, they're fantastic crocodiles. And I'm just like trying to get us to see something of the infinite variety that God has actually created. And so many of these creatures we know about, but actually, they're still creatures, species of animals we've not even found yet. There are creatures living so deep in the ocean, we don't even know what they are yet. And somebody might say, well, if God created them, why did He create them in an environment somewhere where we couldn't see them? Well, He's put them there, so there's always something new to discover. We don't know it all, and we haven't seen it all. But there's something new to discover. And that's the beauty of this world. So, I'm told that so far, there have been over 1 million different kinds of insects that man has classified so far. Over 1 million different kinds of insects. Around 28,000 different kinds of fish, so far, have been classified. 10,000 species of birds. Over 10,000 species of reptiles and over 6,000 different species of mammals have so far been classified by man. In an array of different sizes and shapes and colours and forms, such is the infinite variety that God has put upon this world. So, but the thing is this, when you think about it, you know, when you think about all these different kinds of fish, different kinds of birds, different kinds of animals, when you think of all that there is to see in this world, what do you think? Evolution? Or do you think Creator God? Creator God. And you know, in the vast universe that we were thinking about last week, this is the only planet that's inhabited by living creatures. The only one. In the vastness of that universe, this is the only planet that is inhabited by life. There's no other place, there is no other planet in the entire universe like this one. Now, I know somebody could dive on me and say, how do you know you've never been anywhere else? How do you know we haven't even seen the back end of this galaxy yet, let alone anywhere else? I do know, because of what the Bible tells me. This is created by God to be special. This planet is beautiful. There is no question about it. The only parts of this planet that aren't beautiful to the eyes are where man spoiled it. Everything else about it is beautiful. I mean, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't particularly want to be dropped in the middle of the Sahara Desert, but in its own way it's beautiful. I wouldn't particularly want to be dropped in the middle of Antarctica, but in its own way it's beautiful. The planet is staggeringly beautiful, and all of it created to reflect the glory and the beauty and the majesty and the genius of God. That's what it's for. And he's made it for us to enjoy, but it actually is made to perfection to reflect his glory and his beauty and his majesty and his goodness and his genius. So how insulting then to the Almighty when man comes along and says, God didn't create that, it happened by accident. What blasphemy is that? Lastly, on day 6, he created man in his own image. Male and female, it says, he created them. And we'll be thinking more about this next time. What I want us to think about, though, now in closing, is this expression that comes in several verses here. Living things, living creatures, things that have life in them. So, for example, in verse 21, God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded. And then verse 24, God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind. And verse 28, God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the earth, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And then verse 30, also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the earth, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. So you've got this expression that comes up, living things, or living creatures, or things that have life in them. And you know, I think that raises a rather interesting question. I don't know whether you ever thought about this, but the question, well, it raises a couple of questions really, and the first one is, what is life? What is it? And another question that arises out of it is, where did life come from? Mm-hmm. Alright, so let's think about this first question then, what is life? So anybody care to give us a definition of what life is? See, if you think about it, it's not actually easy to define, is it? What is life? I mean, you could say it's the opposite of death, but actually that's not really a very good definition, really. What is it?
Something alive.
Something that's alive. But that doesn't define what it is, it just says what. So,
I would say life is what is given to man by God.
But
To actually exist, it's a material thing God has given to man for us to actually exist.
And not just to man. My dog's alive. Yeah. So, but I like your expression, William. It's a mysterious thing, because it is. So,
without
so
life, we wouldn't be God, would we? In the end, without life.
No, because he's alive. But to define, all I'm saying is to define it is actually not easy. So, and actually, the scientist knows that. So here's a definition of what life is according to science. This is how science would define life. Life is a characteristic that distinguishes physical entities that have biological processes, such as signalling and self-sustaining processes, from those that do not, either because such functions have ceased, i.e. they have died, or because they never had such functions and are classified as inanimate. Various forms of life exist, such as plants, animals, fungi, protists, archaea and bacteria. The criteria can at times be ambiguous and may or may not define viruses, viroids, potential synthetic life as living. Biology is the science concerned with the study of life. There is currently no consensus regarding the definition of life. In other words, they can't say what it is, the scientists. There is no consensus regarding the definition of life. One popular definition is that organisms are open systems that maintain homeostasis and composed of cells, have a life cycle, undergo metabolism, can grow, adapt to their environment, respond to stimuli, reproduce and evolve. However, several other definitions have been proposed and there are some borderline cases of life such as viruses or viroids. In other words, by their own admission, they can't define it. And in fact, in attempting to define it there, if you think about what was said, all they tell us is what things that are alive do. They reproduce, they sustain themselves somehow, they adapt to their environment, or whatever. They're only telling us what things that are alive do. They're not defining what life is. Are you with me? You following this? So, that's scientists. Scientists, by their own ambition, cannot define what life is. So what about philosophy then? Philosophy should be able to have a go. So, in philosophy, the search for life's meaning has produced much philosophical, scientific, theological, metaphysical speculation throughout history. Different people and cultures believe different things for the answer to this question. The meaning of life as we perceive it is derived from philosophical and religious contemplation of and scientific inquiries about existence, social ties, consciousness and happiness. Many other issues are also involved, such as symbolic meaning, ontology, value, purpose, ethics, good and evil, free will, the existence of one or multiple gods, conceptions of gods, blah 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 blah. They don't know. They don't know what life is. They cannot define what life is. So I looked at my dictionary, and you'd kind of hope that the dictionary could help, wouldn't you? Because it's supposed to tell us what words mean. So I looked up the word life in the dictionary, and it says, life, state of living beings. Well, you know, we know that much. State of living beings, characterized by growth, reproduction, and response to stimuli. Period between birth and death. Period between birth and death, and between birth and the present time. A living person, a way of living. So, in other words, all these do is tell us what things that are alive do, but they don't tell us what life is. Because life is a mysterious thing, actually. So what about the question, where does life come from? Where did life, where did this mysterious thing called life actually come from? Well, essentially, when you get down to it, there are actually two views, really. And the first view, actually, I struggle with these things, because I'm not a scientist, and so I try and find some kind of simple explanation of what bigger brains than I have wrote volumes and volumes about, okay? So, the general view, according to the secular world, about the origins of life, revolves around something called abiogenesis. Abiogenesis attempts to describe the natural process of life arising from non-living matter, such as simple organic compounds. The prevailing scientific hypothesis, in other words, the current view, and the view changes every few years, but the current prevailing scientific hypothesis is that the transition from non-living to living entities was not a single event, but a gradual process of increasing complexity. Life on Earth first appeared as early as 4.28 billion years ago, soon after ocean formation 4.41 billion years ago. And not long, it's a bit strange, isn't it, since the world's only 6,000 years old, but, you know, we'll overlook that a little bit. The earliest known life forms are microfossils of bacteria. Earth's current life may have descended, not the word may have descended from RNA world, although our RNA-based life may not have been the first. Note the word may again there. You see, because all this is hypothesis.
Yeah.
All this is just pure speculation from people who don't believe and don't want to believe in God. So notice the word may that comes right the way through. Which, the mechanism by which life began on Earth is unknown. Well, thank you for being honest. Though many hypotheses have been formulated and are often based on the Milne-Urey experiments. Okay, so the basic idea is that sometime, a very long time ago, 4 billion years ago-ish, okay, in some sort of primeval swamp, or in some water somewhere, all the right conditions just happened to come together, and certain chemicals came together under the right conditions, and some sort of, you know, pre-DNA bacterial form came into existence that resulted eventually in a simple single-cell creature that over millions and millions of years kind of morphed into more complex multi-cell creatures that eventually, you know, evolved and evolved and evolved into much more complex creatures, swam through the oceans, came out into land, became birds, reptiles, eventually mammals, and here we are today. But it all started with this accidental occurrence where certain chemicals came together at the right time, under the right conditions, and some kind of pre-life life form began. Alright? And a simple cell creature, some kind of single cell amoeba, started and eventually became more and more complex. There are serious issues with all that. I mean, the obvious one is that what they class as simple life forms do not evolve into more complex ones. In fact, one species never evolves into another species. It's never happened. There is no evidence that it ever happened, ever. In any fossil record, it just isn't there. But I would go further, and I hope to show you this next week if we can get some technology working, that there's actually no such thing as a simple single-cell creature. Because there's no such thing as a simple cell. You see, to the unquestioning mind, to say there's this little amoeba, you know, it's just a single cell. Well, to the unquestioning mind, alright, it's nothing then, is it? It's like a microscopic piece of semolina, you know, and nothing more. But actually, there's no such thing as a simple cell. A cell is a hyper-complex piece of apparatus that is actually more like a little city. So where did life come from? Well, according to the Bible, God. Life came from God. And you see, God is a living being. God is spirit and God is a living being. So it says in John chapter 5 and verse 26, "For as the Father has life in himself," so God has life in himself. So all life originates with him who has life in himself. So if you go now to Genesis chapter 7 and verse 22, "All in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life." So everything that's living has life in it, and the life comes from God who has life in himself. If you go to verse 30 of chapter 1, "Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the earth, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given green herb for food, and it was so." God has life in himself, and God gives life to his creatures.
Amen.
It comes from him. And that's the only reasonable explanation for this mysterious thing called life. And every creature has built into it a purpose. This is the wonderful thing. Every creature, I said about insects earlier, you might not like them because you don't understand them, but they all have a purpose. They really do. And each creature operates according to that purpose. It has certain instincts, and instincts that are peculiar to itself, and that are part of what God has built into it. Every single creature. And in an incredible way, the whole of this planet, with all the different species and all the different kinds of animals and fish and birds and creatures, everything works together like a unit. It's incredible. If somehow we destroyed every bee on planet Earth, we are completely snookered. Because they are absolutely necessary for certain things. They're not just good because they give us honey that's lovely spread on your toast in the morning. But they pollinate the plants. And without them, we're absolutely done for. And everything, to some degree or another, works into this whole plan that the Creator has built into it. But man is in a different league altogether. Man, it says, is made in the image of God. And man has a dignity and a purpose that is far above the other created creatures and life forms on earth. And yet, we live at a time when people are saying, we're just animals. And our children are being brought up to think that all they are is animals. So is it surprising then that when some of them grow up they behave, actually I'm not going to say like animals, because they actually behave worse. I can't think of one animal that kills for sport. I cannot think of one animal that just destroys things for the sake of destroying them. I read an article in the free newspaper that comes around the Citizen today, and it said about people in Exton were distraught because some vandals have destroyed this defibrillator that was put there, because in 2014 a young girl died at Exton Girls Football Club, and she died. And as a result of that, they got this defibrillator put in place, but somebody just burned it out. Why would you do that? That's just it's not just wanton destruction, but actually it's dangerous. That was put there to save lives, and they've just destroyed it. You know, actually animals don't do that. They may kill for food, but tell people that they're nothing more than animals, then that's why you've got millions of babies being aborted every year. That's why you've got people talking about, well, why don't we bring in euthanasia? That's why you've got people doing the things that they do. Because they devalue life, but we're made in the image of God. And this mysterious thing called life is a gift from God. And so therefore we should value it, therefore we should treasure it. Amen. Well,